Hello, I'm Jamie Gilsig from the Cornwall Free News. This is number 0186, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0186. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet humorist Michael Stusser, who disconnected from technology for a week. It became the subject of the documentary Sleeping with Siri. Why did he do it?
I was inspired by these guys. There's happening all over the country, kids in high school, some colleges, some even younger, doing what's called a digital blackout. So a bunch of kids get together, sometimes with their teacher, sometimes independently, and they say, hey, let's try and do without screens, Facebook, tweeting, for a week. And so I've seen a high school do that here locally in Seattle. So I wanted to do that, but I thought it was important first for me to sort of jack myself through the roof with technology the week before.
Lee Meller is the author of Rampage, which looks at Canadian mass murder and spree killing.
Spree killers and mass murderers both kind of lumped under the term rampage. The difference being that a mass murderer is someone that tends to kill all of his victims in one spot, whereas a spree killer will move from location to location to commit his crimes.
Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. Hunting season could soon be coming to one of the five boroughs.
Staten Island, which is really kind of the most rural borough, it's just not, doesn't have the population density. It has a large area, and it does have a deer problem. So one of these crazy politicians comes up with the idea that we should have the hunting season on Staten Island, which is absolutely insane, because if you take today's modern high-powered rifle, you can shoot the bullet, and it's going to go a mile or two. So, I mean, if you miss the deer, it's going to hit the Statue of Liberty.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff, and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0186, was Jamie Gilsig, who is the editor of Cornwall Free News. And you can check out their website at cornwallfreenews.com. Thank you very much, Jamie, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Well, Darren Baldwin, who is 44, of Blackpool, England, did not take to being fired from his temporary job very well. In fact, according to prosecutor Tracy Yates, Baldwin punched the manager who notified him in the face. Baldwin then produced two knives, and the victim was in fear for his life, Yates said. Baldwin showed the knives to his colleagues and started to shout threats like, "I will cut you up." Baldwin was arrested and originally denied the charges, but later changed to a guilty plea. He was released on bail with the condition that he not return to the factory. Would you like to know what Baldwin did at the factory? Yeah, his job was to pack the company's product for shipment. The company's product, you ask? Glad you did. They make stress balls. Perhaps they should have let him use one. Yeah. Meanwhile, an Oklahoma woman is accused of hiding a gun and meth inside her vagina. Jennifer DeLancey and Christy Dawn Harris were inside a car outside a business in Pontotoc County when they were approached by officers. Now, one of the women had a warrant for her arrest, and both had long criminal records. Also, a police dog detected drugs. On the way there, one of them tells the officer she has another hypodermic needle in her shoe, and they remove that, the county district attorney, Chris Ross, said. The other one said she had to go to the bathroom, and then she repeats it. Officers soon found out why she had to go so badly. During book-in, a female officer noticed something strange during the search. The officer observed the handle of a revolver sticking out from inside her body, Ross said. Court records state it was a wooden and metal item sticking out of her vaginal area. Both women face drug charges. Now, you know, there are many places where the accidental discharge of a gun would not be welcome, but this one would have to be the worst-case scenario. Plus, she had a gun and meth in there. Not to be rude, but the word cavernous comes to mind. Okay, Will Merriweather, age 53, was detained in February by police in Aiken, South Carolina, after an employment agency reported that when he was sitting for an interview, he exposed himself, allegedly telling the interviewer that it fell out and that he must have forgotten to zip up his pants. Police said Merriweather had been accused of a similar incident at a different employment agency a few days earlier. You know, I'm guessing this guy really doesn't want the job. Yeah. In Cottage Row, England, firefighters were called in January when a metal lamppost was reported as smoking because of an electrical short, which was discovered when a Labrador retriever lifted his leg. That species is regarded as quite intelligent, but the dog, after being knocked back by the shock, moments later attempted to engage the lamppost a second time, with the same results. Well, you know, even though that particular species is very bright, as with humans, I'm sure it's fair to say that there are some that are less than winners. An Arkansas woman is accused of crashing her car into a mobile home after trying to flee on a Power Wheels toy truck. Jamie Jeanette Kraft, age 29, was wearing only a sweatshirt, and had trouble maneuvering the toy truck as she screamed, the owner of the mobile home said. Before police arrived, Kraft managed to make it by foot to her mom's home next door. Police said she had a blood alcohol level of 0.217, more than three times the legal limit. Remember, extremely drunk and only wearing a sweatshirt. Classy. Very classy. Time for one more Stuff File news story before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. A woman was arrested after she handed an Applebee's waitress her own driver's license, which had been stolen 2 weeks earlier. Brianna Pretty said someone was using her identity after her wallet was stolen with cash, credit cards, and her license. The woman entered the restaurant with three other customers on February 25th. After ordering drinks, the girl handed me my ID as a fake ID, Pretty said. Playing it cool, she took their orders before calling police, who arrested the woman on felony charges that included identity theft. Now, it should be noted that the woman using a fake ID was 27 years old, which means she didn't need a fake ID to buy alcohol because she was old enough to do that on her own. This could have easily been the idiot of the day, but it wasn't. That comes later. What comes right now is our first guest. We've talked to humorist Michael Stesser before. He was on our old radio show back in the day when his book, The Dead Guy Interviews, came out. Well, now we flash forward to our current time of constant connectivity. Michael is part of a documentary that was born out of an article he wrote called Sleeping with Siri. He joins us now on the line from Seattle. Hi, Michael.
Hey, man. Nice to talk to you again.
Nice to have a chance to chat with you again as well. So what you did, I understand, is you went with life immersed completely in technology for a week, and then cold turkey the next week? Is that how it worked?
Exactly. I was inspired by these guys. There's happening all over the country, kids in high school, some colleges, some even younger, doing what's called a digital blackout. So a bunch of kids get together, sometimes with their teachers, sometimes independently, and they say, hey, let's try and do without screens, Facebook, tweeting for a week, or none of them ever make it a week, but they try. And then, you know, what is their life like? What are they giving up? What are they gaining? And so I'd seen a high school do that here locally in Seattle, so I wanted to do that, but I thought it was important first for me to sort of jack myself through the roof with technology the week before. And so I did a little techno gorge where I just constantly tweeted and Skyped and Facebooked and Foursquared until I could barely stand.
Okay, so now how much more technology plugged in were you during that week than you are normally? Like, are you?
Oh, I went way over the top. I mean, the teen average for texts a month. Do you want to guess how many texts are sent and received by the average teen?
I heard some ridiculous figure. I can't remember what it was, but it's in the thousands, I understand.
Yeah, 3,600 a month.
Yeah.
And so I got up to that level. If you break that down daily, it's like 187 a day or something. So I blasted people with constant texting, a lot of LOL and emoticons and stupid stuff. But also, you know, I'm talking about if I had to drive somewhere in the car, sadly, it's illegal, but I did it. I was Skyping or tweeting or, you know, looking at Facebook posts as we go, because I wanted to push myself to the limit. And it turns out, and you see this in the documentary we did, because I had a doctor tracking my entire progress, my blood pressure went through the roof, my pulse was sky high. It is not healthy at all to constantly being reply to all stimulus that's coming in.
Okay, so you went from overstimulus with going crazy online, and then yep. You went cold turkey. So what was that like?
Boy, you know, for me, the digital blackout was quite a relief. I understand that teenagers would have a much harder time because they're much more socially connected that way. But, I mean, it had its challenges. You're going to get lost because you don't have GPS in the car or whatever, that kind of thing. Old paper maps is whack for people. Nobody can get a hold of you if you step out of the house. But I just felt liberated, man. I felt freed up. If you say you're meeting somebody at 6:30, they don't have the opportunity to text you 19 times, I'm running 3 minutes late, or, hey, can I bring so-and-so? It's just like the old days where you'd say, just meet me there. That's it. I'll see you there. And I liked it. Other people didn't like it. They were like, hey, man, I can't get a hold of you. What's wrong with you? Or do you want to see this video on YouTube? You know, people shove technology down your throat. It comes at you. You're not always the one initiating it.
Right. Well, and then you turn this into an article that you wrote in Seattle. And I should tell people right now, if they haven't had the chance to see some of your writing, it's all spectacular. People can check out your website, which is michaelstusser.com. They can see all the stuff that you write. But anyway, so you write this stuff. You write this article. So at what point, or was it something you decided to do when you started? Did you figure this was going to become a documentary?
You know, I think we thought we'd shoot it. A friend of mine, Marty Reamer, is a director here in town. He does educational videos about bullying and about great topics for schools. And he heard about what I was doing, and he said, you know, I think it'd be good because they do a digital blackout video that helps schools organize and put posters up and recruit other kids. He said, if you don't mind, you know, it's a little bit radical for what I typically do, but we'll follow you around for a couple weeks with a crew and just see if we can make anything of it. And, you know, we thought that the week with technology would be a no-brainer because it's interesting to see somebody try and Skype in the car. And we thought maybe the digital blackout was a little boring, but in fact, they both really look good. They're interesting. It's strange to see somebody use a library or try and find a phone booth or just be bored nowadays. You know what I mean? And so we've got these two sides. We talked to a lot of people throughout it about what it's like, neurologists and my doctor and yoga teachers. And it's just kind of a good-hearted thing, and it makes you think. I mean, I don't think people are in droves going to be throwing their iPhones off cliffs or anything. But you will see and hear from professionals about how this ever-increasing intrusion at dinner and in movies and in the car is not maybe such a good thing. Maybe we should set some limits, and that's got to be determined person by person and family by family. But I think it's something we should talk about. You and I, before the show, were talking about how people are a little bit rude nowadays with their heads buried in their phones and maybe ordering from baristas or not looking at you in an elevator. And I'm more and more upset by what I'm seeing. I'm not trying to be preachy, but I'm wondering if we can't, before it gets too far out of control, just instill some etiquette around technology.
I once wrote a blog piece about this very thing, and in that piece I mentioned one situation where I was at a stop sign, and with not a stop sign, but a traffic light. I was at the red light with my car, not in the crosswalk. Some girl crossing the street actually bounced off my hood and looked at me like I was doing something wrong because her face was buried in her iPhone.
Like you should have backed up.
Exactly.
Phone in her hand.
Yeah. Speaking of getting angry, though, did you get in contact or did you hear from people after the week was done where you had no communication, people who were actually mad at you?
Oh, yeah. We have in the film a couple voicemails of people who are like, I tried you on Facebook. I sent you a tweet pic. I left you a message. What the hell is wrong with you? I mean, literally, it's in the film. It's a hilarious thing. But somebody was like, what's going? Yeah, they're upset if you don't get back to them. You see that now with, I don't know how to get away from somebody once I start a texting stream with them. I don't know how to end. Do I have to break up with them every time I'm texting back and forth? There has to be some gentle way of, hey, this has been a really nice texting digital conversation, but I'm stepping into a place where I don't want to be available right now or whatever. I don't know. I don't know how to do it.
Do you find it odd, though, that there are people who want to know where they can get you at all times, yet we seem to live in a world... And I only bring this up because, you know, I did try to call you to do this interview. We live in a world where people are screening their calls.
Oh, yeah. Well, and there's something liberating, like I say, this digital blackout concept. You can call it whatever you want, no screens or turn off the tube. But where you say to somebody or a bunch of people, you send out an email. That's what I did when I went dark. And you say, I am not going to be available in the conventional means that you're used to. You can snail mail me a letter. You can drive by if you want. You can send a carrier pigeon if you're in the mood. But I'm not going to be instantaneously, you know, available.
Now,
and it was awesome. It turns people's head around. They're like, what? You know, I hooked up with my sister during the technical week. There's something called Life 360, and it literally tracks your whereabouts. You have to agree to it. But her and I could constantly see each other's whereabouts within, I don't know, 12 feet or something. You know where they're at. And, man, I didn't like being tracked.
Yeah.
I didn't like it.
It's like wearing an ankle monitor.
Well, that's different.
That's exactly.
I've got one of those, too.
Okay. Now... people can go to the website at michaelstasser.com. They can actually see the trailer for this film. But where and how can people see the entire film?
The film right now, we're doing sort of the festival circuit, so it's not sort of on Netflix quite yet. The trailer, just, you know, go to YouTube and see Sleeping with Siri. But eventually, yeah, no, we'd like to have it out there. We're currently in the American Documentary Film Festival in April, which is in Palm Springs, and we're in the Palm Beach International Festival and some others, hopefully coming to a city near you. But eventually, we'll absolutely find a model where somebody can see it. We're trying to get it into schools and stuff. But as of now, it's a short documentary that's appearing in film festivals.
Well, I urge people to go to your website at michaelstasser.com because they'll find out more information about the film. And they could also read the entire article that this film was based on, basically.
Yes.
And they can see that, which is a great read. Now, I haven't seen the whole film myself, so I don't know what the ending is like. But I'm just and I don't want to want you to give it away. But I'm going to ask a question: do you and the entire crew at the end of the film do the Harlem Shake?
I wish I'd talked to you ahead of time, man. That would have been excellent. No, we don't. I'm afraid not.
Darn.
No kumbaya moments. But we do talk to some people about finding balance in this thing, though, in this madness that everybody's participating in. Maybe you don't do an entire week of digitally blacking out, but you agree that three times a week you're going to have, like, a phone-free dinner with your mate or your family or your friend. I would like to see that happening, people getting back to sort of balance, because I feel like we're out of balance. I mean, I literally check my email or my phone, I don't know, three times a minute for real with words with friends or Facebook or something. I don't know about you, but I'm too I got back the other direction. I need to step back again. I need some help.
Well, I have an old cell phone. It's steam driven rotary and doesn't do text. So
get out.
Yeah.
Well, I'm proud of you.
Yeah. Again, people can check the website michaelstusser.com. The article is called "Sleeping with Siri," and so is the name of the film. I thank you very, very much for being on the program with us.
It was a pleasure, man. Thank you very much.
Humorist Michael Stusser. To find out more information about his story and the documentary film, you can check out his website. Just go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0186, and you'll find the link.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. If you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Informed or entertained? Hey, you're doing both. This is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the author of Rampage, plus Peter Franklin the Gabby Cabby will drop by. But first, we have more Stuff File news on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Now, it seems that there's no end to the idiocy that is some schools' zero-tolerance rules. Here's one of the latest. A second grader at the West Michigan Academy of Arts and Academics, which is a charter school in Ferrisburg, was found to have a mini-tool at school. It wasn't large enough to fall under state-mandated suspension and expulsion rules for dangerous weapons, which is what the school director, Travis Thompson, admits. In fact, the tool was so innocuous that he didn't send a note home to the parents. We didn't feel like we needed to draw attention to it because it was a non-threatening situation, he told a reporter, noting the boy was not threatening anyone. Still, Thompson called police because the tool had a knife blade, which is less than 2 inches long. Police weren't interested either. It was not long enough for it to be considered a dangerous weapon, a department spokeswoman said. Since it wasn't against the law or state rules, Thompson only suspended the unnamed 7-year-old for 8 days. Now, if the director didn't want to, quote, draw attention to it, unquote, then why talk to reporters about a non-threatening situation? This is just lunacy. Oh, but wait. Here's another one. A 16-year-old student at Cypress Lake High School in Fort Myers, Florida, was riding home on the school bus when a fellow student pulled out a loaded gun to take out his frustrations on a third student. I think he was really going to shoot him right then and there, the unnamed boy says. No doubt he was going to shoot him point blank. He reacted quickly, grabbing the gun and wrestling it away from the 15-year-old who was also on the school's football team. Two other students jumped in to help, defusing the deadly situation with no deaths or injuries. Lee County Sheriff's investigators recovered the gun and arrested the boy. The school took emergency action. Principal Tracy Perkins suspended all three of the heroes for 3 days for being part of an incident where a weapon was present. note to the Lee County Sheriff's Office. How about taking emergency action and giving commendations to all three students? And while you're at it, why not arrest the principal for being a complete and utter moron? How do the people in charge follow through with these rules and then manage to keep their jobs? I mean, honestly, does anyone in these cases have a shred of common sense? Oh, but wait, there's one more. Josh Welch, age 7, has ADHD and struggles in classes at Park Elementary School in Brooklyn Park, Maryland. He was eating a strawberry Pop-Tart when he noticed that it started to take the shape that he liked. All I was trying to do was turn it into a mountain, but it didn't look like a mountain, really. Before he could improve on the shape, a teacher came over. She was pretty mad, Josh said, and I think I was in big trouble. The problem? The teacher said Josh had bitten the breakfast treat into the shape of a gun. It kind of looked like a gun, but it wasn't, the boy said, demonstrating more intelligence than his own teacher. The second grader was suspended for 2 days, and school officials sent a letter home with kids to advise parents that a student used food to make an inappropriate gesture. Oh, I've got a few inappropriate gestures for that school. This could all be the fall of civilization as we know it. Do you ever wonder who makes up these cockamamie rules? Well, hold that thought a minute while I get to the next story. I did not do anything illegal, testified Mike Rios, age 42, in his own trial on charges that he was a pimp, a procurer of women for prostitution, and a rapist. His business, he said, was a legitimate one, providing strippers he offered in online ads. But jurors begged to differ. Rios was convicted of running a prostitution ring out of his home in Moreno Valley, California. In addition, the jury found him not guilty of one count of rape, but hung during deliberations on another count. And during another portion of the trial on 6 charges of insurance fraud after an auto accident, Rios testified that he merely misstated his claims. I wouldn't call it a fraudulent statement, Rios told the court. I just wasn't being honest. Not surprisingly, he was found guilty on those charges, too. Now that he was convicted, the Moreno Valley School Board can start working to get rid of him. He is a member of the board. He refused to resign when he was indicted and continued to attend board meetings. Rios's bail has now been revoked, and he faces up to 33 years in prison. So, going back to my question at the end of the last story, school board members make up these cockamamie rules. Now it's all becoming painfully clear. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Last year, we had Lee Meller, author of Cold North Killers, Canadian Serial Murder, on the show. This year, he has another book out that details Canadian killers. This one is called Rampage, and Lee joins us on the line right now from Ontario. Hi, Lee.
Hey, Peter. How are you?
Fine. Thanks for being on the program with us once again. Now, when we had you on the program last year, we were talking basically about serial killers. But this is more the spree killers, the rampage shooters that you're talking about this time, correct?
Yes, spree killers and mass murderers both kind of lumped under the term rampage. The difference being that a mass murderer is someone that tends to kill all of his victims in one spot, whereas a spree killer will move from location to location to commit his crimes. So if we're to think about it in Canadian terms, someone like Mark Lapine would be a mass murderer because he killed all of his victims at a single institution, whereas a spree killer might be more like, this guy actually we had in the States in California recently, the cop that went a little crazy and he was moving from spot to spot and they were having a hard time tracking him down, but he wasn't really having the same sort of psychological cool-off that you'd see in a serial killer. That would be an example of a spree killer.
Now, I understand in this book you gathered basically more than 25 of Canada's most lethal mass and spree killers for this book, correct?
Yep.
It's
mostly just the most interesting cases. Unfortunately, the vast majority of, unfortunately for the reader, the vast majority of mass murders committed in Canada tend to be guys that just kill their entire families, and it's tragic, but it gets to be a little bit repetitive reading to just keep reciting those details of, guy loses it and guns down his entire family. So I didn't I didn't try and make it as exhaustive as I did Cold North Killers for that reason. But what I tried to do is give a variety of different Rampage murderers. So there's spree killers in there and mass murderers.
Okay, so when we take out, as you say, those who commit the crime against their own family, when you remove those from the category, is there something besides the act of the violence that they commit that these men, and I'm assuming they're all men, have in common with each other?
Not particularly, because they have different motivations. You'll get people like Mark Lapine that are driven by, I think, a sense of hopeless rage. They feel entitled to something that they haven't earned and they're unable to achieve, and their one expression of that is violence. But then you'll get very cold-blooded mass murderers who will kill for profit. For instance, there was a guy called Albert Gay, who in 1949, he blew up a small airplane which his wife was traveling on, and he had insured, put out a life insurance policy on her. And he had done that really just to collect the money and to be with a new lover, and was eventually caught for that. So there's a number of motivations, and it really just depends. I think when people tend to think of mass murders and spree killers, we tend to think more of what we see in American media, where it's this gunman just goes out in public and just kind of indiscriminately massacres as many people as possible. And the interesting thing is, in Canada, we don't really have that. We do have people that walk into workplaces and will kill a large amount of their fellow employees, or in schools, more post-secondary institutions than elementary schools. But we don't have that sort of same phenomenon in the States of just a citizen who just loses it and kills other citizens, as many as they can. In fact, I was only able to find one example of that, and that person didn't kill enough other people to qualify as a mass murderer.
Well, what qualifies as a mass murderer?
That would be four or more fatalities.
Well, let's get back to the fellow you were referring to earlier, the one who was trying to kill his wife on an airplane.
Successfully killed his wife.
Successfully killed his wife on an airplane. I'm just wondering, is it a situation, I don't know if it's easy to get into the minds of these kind of people, but was this a situation where he's just not thinking, he's so laser-honed into the one victim on the plane that he doesn't take into consideration the other victims on the plane?
I think for him it's almost like the mentality of somebody who's a general commanding an army, except it's his own personal war for his personal gain. Those people are just collateral damage. He depersonalizes them. You're looking at a very narcissistic, possibly psychopathic personality. And with those types of people, they just simply don't care. They understand the concept that I'm not supposed to hurt other people, and other people get upset when I hurt other people. They may even understand morally why that is. They just choose to disregard it, and their neurological hardware or the philosophies they've adapted allow them to do that. I suppose it's very difficult for us to understand who aren't in that headspace, but it's really that they just don't consider it. They don't have feelings for those people.
What is it in writing this book, and also in writing your previous book, which was Cold North Killers, Canadian Serial Murder, what is it you're trying to impart to the reader? What do you want them to take away from experiencing what you've put together in this latest book, Rampage?
I think that first, with both books, there's always been this perception that we don't have this problem in Canada, or these problems in Canada. Now, admittedly, we are a little bit more aware that we have problems with rampage murders in Canada. I think the serial killing was downplayed a lot. Rampage was more just a sequel of the serial killing. But I wanted to bring to the people's attention that we do have a history of this that's been sort of glossed over and not talked about enough. We have some really heinous crimes that happened in this country. For instance, on September the 4th and 5th of 1970, there was a man in the Kootenai Valley by the name of Dale Nelson, and he just got completely drunk and went on a rampage, slaughtered a whole family, abducted two little girls, eviscerated one of them, cannibalized them. And, I mean, we're talking Jeffrey Dahmer-type stuff, but for some reason it doesn't really enter the public consciousness here as much as it does in the States. So I just wanted to bring that out, that we do have these problems in Canada too, and kind of raising a question, why aren't we more aware of it? Hmm. That would sort of be the theme of both books. The second is, I find that often when a tragedy happens, specifically with a rampage murder, someone will come out, a politician, for example, and they'll say, you know, this is an unbearable tragedy that we will never be able to understand. And I find that, I hate to use the term offensive, but I find it kind of demeaning to my intelligence and counterproductive. Of course we can understand it. Admitting defeat and trying not to understand it, that's the problem. That's why it keeps occurring. The better understanding we have of it, the better chance we have of counteracting it in the future. So I would say those are the two points of why I've written these books, to try and help people understand that this does happen and understand the varying motivations as to why it does happen. And in this book, I get into a number of things, such as personality disorders. I look at psychopathy, narcissism, paranoid personality disorder, things like that.
Is it possible, though, to prevent these things in the future? Considering we don't have, you know, thankfully, the numbers that, as you mentioned, they have it to that degree in the States. Isn't it next to impossible to predict when somebody, quote unquote, snaps?
I think that in the case, if we were talking about serial killers, we can certainly work to catch them much quicker than we do. And probably the same with spree killers, too, because they're moving from location to location. And if we have a better understanding of their psychology and their personal sense of space and geography and what they're likely to do, that once they start their sprees or series of killings, that we can head them off before more victims are hurt. Now, the mass murderers, that's, unfortunately, I'm going to say that once that begins, the mass murder, there's really not much we can do about it. But however, we may be able to detect traits in children or people in our own communities which are kind of heading in this direction. Like, there was a lot of warning signs with a lot of these offenders. Valerie Fabricant at Concordia University spent, you know, almost a decade threatening to shoot up the school, which he eventually did, but there was no real action taken against him. He was overtly threatening to kill people. And I think in many cases like that, where the behavior is evident and that people are saying, I will use violence to assert my will, I think that then at that point there can be some intervention, and it's remarkable that it doesn't happen.
The book is called Rampage, Canadian Mass Murder and Killing Spree. It's written by Lee Meller. And Lee, I thank you very, very much for being on the program with us once again.
Oh, it's great talking to you as always, Peter. And hey, maybe there'll be a third, and we'll get to talk about some other types of criminals here in Canada.
I look forward to that. Lee Meller, author of Rampage. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0186, and you'll find links to Lee's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. It was 80 years ago this month that Franklin D. Roosevelt delivered one of his most famous lines. On March 4th, 1933, he declared, "The only thing we have to fear is fear itself." He believed that fear was crippling America during the Great Depression. He also believed that the first step to overcoming that fear was to admit its existence. Now, 8 decades later, fear is again crippling many aspects of American life. This time, however, it's the fear of being sued that's plaguing many Americans. In my weekly visits with you, I've shared examples of how that fear has affected doctors, teachers, and many others. 1 year ago, I told you about how the fear of being sued even led one person to refuse to give life-saving CPR to a coworker dying before her eyes. Let's be fair. The good news is that we have the power to eliminate this problem. But first, policymakers have to admit that it exists. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, the Stuff File presents the Gabby Cabby, direct from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge in the city that never sleeps, New York. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And yes, we do indeed have Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby from the Big Apple. How you doing, sir?
I am doing just fine.
Excellent, excellent. Now, I understand one of the stories, if people go to your website at gabby.com, is an interesting little ditty about a woman who has a converted truck and sells threads?
Well, you know, I'm saying threads, meaning, of course, clothing. New York City is famous for the street people who sell everything from Frankfurters to pretzels to handbags and what have you. I mean, our streets are literally filled, just filled with people. I guess you'd call it almost instant capitalism. You could bring all your junk from your basement to the city of New York, set up a table, and you'd be making money in 15 minutes. But I've often wondered, how do the storekeepers, the ones who are paying taxes, disability, compensation, medical insurance, and all the other things that go with running a store, how do they feel about, you know, these people who are really basically getting a free ride? They don't have to pay any of the documentation. Well, I guess, you know, as long as prosperity is going on, everybody figures they're making lots of money and they don't care. Well, now people are beginning to care her own stores, and I guess she must have hit somebody's sensitivity. If you take a look at her on the website, she looks like a very cute, very nice lady, you know, who's just trying to make a buck. But what's happening now is that the established forces are kind of combining against her to stop her from selling clothing from a truck. I mean, it's an interesting concept, and it's not such a big deal, but I guess because the economy is down, you know, people are upset now.
Now, are they just picking on her? Is she the poster child for this issue?
Yeah, well, she's become it because, you see, there are so many people selling Frankfurters and pretzels and all these other things. And now she comes along. She's in a little truck, sort of like what looks like a UPS van or a FedEx van, and she's selling clothing. I don't know. I guess it's something that hit the sensitivity or the elbows of the people who maybe weren't too happy before, but now they're enraged. So, yeah, they're going to pick on her. Now, but, you know, hey, you got to be tough if you want to make it in New York City.
Exactly. Now, to be clear, do these people, either the people who sell clothing or the people who sell hot dogs, do they require any kind of permits to do what they do?
Well, everybody is supposed to have a permit, but most of them ignore it. The only thing that's really, you know, put into force is the health department with food. If you're selling food like Frankfurters and hot dogs and all that, then they're pretty tough about you having some kind of a certificate. But I don't know that there's a direct relationship between the money that the health department is collecting and the cleanliness of the food or anything. It's not like one thing is being used to the other. I think the reason that people aren't dying all over the place from food poisoning is, look, if you set up a stand on the corner of 33rd and 3rd and people start getting sick, everybody's going to know who's it coming from and you'll be out of business. So it's almost like a self-policing.
Mm. In the meantime, I understand that illegal immigrants are just running willy-nilly in the streets of New York.
Well, yeah, I got it. Well, not running willy-nilly, but maybe they will. But I got to explain to your nice listeners, you know, the mythology behind this whole thing. I think President Obama and the Democrat Party figure the most they can blame on the Republicans, everything. You know, Republicans are evil, blah, 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 blah. It's going to be very good for them. As a side benefit, they figure if they start freeing the illegal aliens, once they get free and become citizens, they'll forever have the right to vote, and then they'll only vote for the Democrats. Well, if you take a stroll through Spanish Harlem, El Barrio, you'll find that that's not necessarily true. And the reason for that is that the people who are working in an area like Spanish Harlem who live in an area like that are already getting pretty low wages, but legally low wages, you know, whatever the minimum is. Well, you start releasing all these illegal aliens who are going to all have to start looking for jobs. They're not going to care whether they're Latinos or not. All they're going to know is that, uh-oh, here's somebody who's willing to work for less money than I am, and knowing the way business works in the United States, you're going to be out and they're going to be in. So I think, if anything, this is going to kind of bounce back on Obama, certainly in the Latino area. And then I also think in the black areas, because right now, for African Americans, the unemployment rate in the United States is 25%. The last thing that they need as a community is to have more low-priced people. So I think it's not going to work. I think he's in trouble. Should have asked me first, but he never asks me. He does everything without asking me.
Mm. Meanwhile, I understand maybe there's a chance to go deer hunting in Staten Island.
Yeah, well, just you saying that makes people very surprised because, of course, Staten Island is one of our five boroughs, and who thinks of New York City as having deers? But actually, Staten Island, which is really kind of the most rural budget borough, and it was because the only way you could ever get there was by the ferry. Now you can get there by bridge, but even so, it's just not, doesn't have the population density. It has a large areas, and it does have a deer problem. So one of these crazy politicians comes up with the idea that we should have a shooting season, a hunting season on Staten Island, which is absolutely insane, because if you take today's modern high-powered rifle, you can shoot the bullet, and it's going to go a mile or two. So, I mean, if you miss the deer, it's going to hit the Statue of Liberty. So that's crazy, and people said, no, you can't do that if you want to get rid of the deer. So then somebody came up with the idea, again, one of these crazy politicians, that we do it with bows and arrows. Now, I'd like you to find me one person in New York City who knows how to shoot a bow and arrow. I mean, there's going to be arrows flying all over the place, much the same way the bullets will. So I don't know how they're going to cull the herd, as they say, but it can't be with a hunt. It just can't, not in my city, unless we permit the taxi drivers to chase the deers down and run them over. That might be an interesting way to do it.
Do you have a taste for venison, do you?
Not particularly. A few times I've ever tried it, I didn't like it because I found it very tough and stringy. And now, having said that, there'll be 2 million people in your audience who are going to say, oh, well, it wasn't cooked right, it wasn't cooked right, it wasn't cooked right. I don't think you could ever make venison taste the way I would like it to taste. It just wouldn't happen.
Well, let's continue talking about animals. I understand that a man's best friend is being treated really well with a pretty pricey dog run.
$500,000. I mean, it's just absolutely insane. They're building this, and it's on the website. You take a picture of it, Gabby.com. I mean, look at the picture. It's going to cost $500,000 by the time they finish with it. Probably going to be the most expensive dog run on the face of the earth. And it's amazing that here I've told you some stories which indicate there are some hard times economically, and yet the politicians go out just to placate a neighborhood and build them this dog run. I haven't actually seen it yet, just the pictures and the sketches, but it sounds so nice. I think I'm going to go over there every day for a run.
Mm. So the dogs, will be living the life of luxury. Meanwhile, I understand some people who are actually living the life of luxury have a garbage problem?
Well, this is the deal. When people come to New York City and you see garbage all over the place, you figure, wow, boy, what in the world do they do? Blah, 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 blah. Well, but here's the thing. You can't put the garbage out more than 2 hours before you pick up time. So I point out to people that all the garbage that you see on the streets is really not going to be there the next time we pass by, because they are pretty efficient about picking it up. The fact of the matter is that there's so much of it, and a lot of the superintendents, the guys that run these buildings, feeling a little bit lazy, the guy says, well, I don't want to wait. I'll put it out when I want to, and then I can go back to sleep and have a nap. So more and more garbage is sitting out on the streets longer than that two-hour deal, and the city's going to start cracking down on it, because people are complaining that, you know, you're walking, it's like walking through a maze on our sidewalks when you have to work your way through all these big bags of garbage, which will be gone. But the fact of the matter is they're there for the time they're there.
So basically it's just an eyesore for the swanky set, is what you're saying?
Yeah, well, I think it's probably an eyesore. I don't know if we can blame it only on the swanky set. Nobody likes them and going through it. And they're very strict. If you don't wrap it, if you look at the picture, you'll see, you know, it's pretty neat as far as garbage goes. but it's the length of time that it's sitting.
How's the rat population?
Well, the rat population has shot up. Are you talking about humans or animals?
Humans. I mean, animals.
Yeah,
well,
we got a lot of humans, too, here that are like
yeah.
that. But the population of the rats went up tremendously after Hurricane Sandy because they, you know, everybody said, oh, they're all going to drown in the subways. No, rats are kind of clever. They need to get out of the subways and all the places they were in. So we have more than ever before. But again, I would point out, and I'm a night person. I generally work at night. You very rarely ever see one. So we may have millions and millions of rats. We may have the most rats of any place in the world, but they're very clever little people, and they know how to stay out of the way.
Mm. Meanwhile, since you don't see any rats anywhere, I understand you may have seen a celebrity or two. You have a celebrity sighting for us?
This is a trap question because I don't remember...
I was looking at the website, Gabby.com, and I happened to see a picture of Matthew Broderick.
Ah, yes. Okay, yes. It's not that was a senior moment. It's just that I write you an email telling you what I have, and then sometimes I forget. Maybe it is a senior moment. Anyway, it shows that I'm not lying, at least.
Plus he's
married to that girl. Well, I don't really think he's that attractive. What's her name again?
Sarah Jessica Parker?
Yeah, I don't really see what the big deal is. But anyway,
okay.
I digress. New York University and Columbia University, which are two of our universities which own the world in terms of the neighborhoods that they're in. They own all the apartment houses, the buildings, and everything. They're like huge monsters that spread out through their neighborhoods, taking over everything. They don't pay taxes because they're not exempt and everything. You know, I mean, they're great institutions to go there as a college kid, but it's kind of annoying to have something like that in your city, and they're taking over everything. Well, they had a meeting at NYU about the local people that's down in Greenwich Village who were complaining about how NYU was taking over the world. And a friend of mine who teaches at NYU said, how would you like to come along and listen to everybody scream and carry on? I'm not much of a community organizer, but, you know, it sounded like a lot of people would be miserable, and that's kind of fun. And he was there, and I was surprised. He made a very eloquent speech as to how the community should not let NYU take over the world. And he's right to some extent. He really is.
Mm. Did he get a standing ovation?
Yes, but not because of who he was. Because, you know, a lot of these entertainers, when you see them in real life, and I've seen a lot through the years, they're really dressed like regular people unless you happen to actually know them. More often than not, I seem to be the only person in the situation who knows who the person is. And since I don't go over and bother them, they kind of must be wondering, gee, doesn't anybody know who I am? Doesn't anybody know who I am?
Well, you know who they are because that's because you know everybody, Peter. And that's one of the reasons we like having you here. People can check out your website, which is at Gabby.com. They can also send you an email to peter@gabby.com. Always a pleasure to have you on the program, sir.
Thank you very much, everybody. Have a great day. Bye.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about out of racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program, but we still have time for one more item, and that would be the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
Derek Curtis Saunders, a Denver, Colorado police officer, appealed his firing to the city's Civil Service Commission's hearing panel after he was caught speeding. Speeding cops is pretty much expected, right? Not in this case. Saunders was not only off duty, he was going 143 miles per hour in a 55 zone in a friend's car with a blood alcohol level of 0.089%. And he was pulled over by a state trooper and arrested. He pleaded guilty to driving while impaired and reckless driving. The panel overturned Saunders' firing, ordering him to be reinstated after a 42-day suspension. But Saunders wasn't satisfied with the ruling and appealed it to the full commission. It ruled that his firing was justified. Okay, so you do something incredibly stupid as to drive at extremely high speeds while you're drunk and you lose your job as a cop. But on appeal, you get it back with only a 42-day suspension. Now, most people at this point would praise God, Allah, or whomever you pray to. Heck, even atheists know to quit while you're ahead. So after all of this, why would someone test fate to get fully reinstated as a police officer? Well, this time around, there are probably two reasons. One is an extremely overinflated ego, and the other is he's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0186. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0186. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You could also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Today's broadcast could be heard directly in your home, car, or wireless device, or on your computer, so you can listen on an outpatient basis. For those of you hearing this show directly inside your head, please adjust your medication.